This piece was brought to you by the International Culinary Center, culinarycenter.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Right, Loose Buttons, who will be live in studio. You are listening to Snacky Tunes. Oof. First show, Jitters, back 2016. you're listening to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz, coming to you from a torrential downpour. Actually, just rained just long enough for all the guests to show up and get caught in, and now it's done. First up on the show today, we have Peter Meehan, the editorial director and co-founder of Lucky Peach, who I'm sure if you listen to this show, you have definitely read the magazine. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you for having me.
As I was saying earlier, and just so it can officially go on record, I love the magazine.
I love you for loving the magazine.
We got my mom a subscription.
Really?
To it. Yeah. That was like one of our.
Is she going to be into it?
She's super into it.
She going to be like, why are there all these like racist dick jokes in this food magazine? Why are you sending this to me?
We've kind
of eased up on that over the years. That's kind of the old style.
Yeah, that's like more like early issues. Maybe she like politely turns the page, but the in-depth articles, I think she's super. Super thing. Do you guys have anywhere like all of your the opening of the issue where they say like go eat here, which is a place you would like never could remember to go to? Is that like a map anywhere that people could go to?
Is that a good idea that I'll be taking from this converted container back to the office? No, we started doing restaurant recommendations in the front of the magazine called Atlases.
Yeah, that's
like
yeah.
maybe four or five issues ago.
Yeah,
and then. We've expanded that online, so all of those are online, and then we do more. I got some great ones from John and Vinny in LA that are going to go up this week on the site, and then we're slowly going through. Like I wrote a travelogue piece about Hawaii, 10 issues ago or whatever, and it's kind of on the long to-do list to go through and pick out all the places mentioned in it and throw them as pins on a map, largely because, like, and I'm sure you know this as a food person, you get emails from people being like, where should I eat in XYZ place?
Yeah.
And it's like, the greatest thing is when you've sent that email before, you can go and cut and paste and be like, here's my list, go there.
Yeah.
You know?
And you look like a superstar. Or you just, like, go to Eat or Heat Map and just...
Right. Like, be like, go to one of these places.
I waffle back and forth between seeming, like, omnipresent, just in, like, knowing where to eat everywhere in the world,
right.
or just being like, you know, I look at the same places everyone else looks at.
Right. I try to know the guy who knows where to go, because there are only so many cities that I know actually well myself. But I feel like if you know who to, you know, who the person to tap into is kind of the key to getting the right recommendations in different places.
Yeah. I mean, did you think that you would become like a living, breathing website for like where to eat in the entire world? Did you know that would be one of like the benefits or curses of the job?
When I moved to New York, I was a receptionist, and it was a company that did a bunch of different things. But one of the services that they offered was computer repair.
Mm.
And I was going to leave after like a year and a half or whatever, because I had done enough answering of the phones, and they moved me over to fixing computers. And I found that when I learned, and I didn't know really how to do it, but I knew enough that all my old relatives would call me when their online bridge games broke down. And so it taught me then that if you become associated with expertise around a topic, you will be targeted for it often. So, you know, like doing the restaurant reviewing job for the Times, it was like, okay, I'm going to be, you know.
Well, I mean, you're probably better suited than everybody, but after a while, you're like, just look it up yourself.
It is like the Eater 38, or be like, oh, we have a whole section on our website where you can, I could give you my top three recommendations by giving you that link, or you could search there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always nice when people ask. And then I find it always funny, like being like walking around Manhattan or something, and some tourists will be like, where should I get pizza around here? And I want to be like, you have no idea how complicated a question you just asked me.
I don't think I've ever been asked by anyone like off the street, like, hey, where should I go?
It happens to me randomly all the time.
Really?
Yeah, like all the time. You know, I'll be, you know, like you'll stop and you'll see some people with a map out and you'll give them that helpful look and they'll be like, we're just trying to find a place to have brunch. And it's like, oh my God,
okay.
Like, let's talk.
Okay,
like,
first you want to start with prune.
Right.
Okay, but maybe that's not what you're into,
right.
What type of cuisine. Speaking of Johnny and Vinny, you're going to be doing an event with them next month called Eating Out Loud. How did kind of like taking the magazine and turning it into like a real live event come about?
Okay, so probably a year or 2 years, I'm old enough that I just don't remember how many years have been since something happened. NYC, NPR, like the local radio station, got in touch about doing a show that they have at Symphony Space called Selected Shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to take, you know, things from the magazine, have people read them on stage. And it was like definitely an honor and definitely frightening to think that Gabby Hoffman is going to be, you know, like reading something and we're going to be reading. And but we went and did it, and it was a thrill. Like, it was, it came out really great. I mean, I remember getting ready for it, and BD Wong, who's an actor who was like, you know, on Law and Order back in the day. I mean, that's where I know his work best from. he was the host, and before I went up there, I had practiced reading my piece a couple times, and my wife was like, "You sound like you have marbles in your mouth." And I told BD Wong that before going on stage, and he was like, "Your wife is right." But well, he took me backstage and worked on my presentation with me. But it ended up being a fun night, and it was like a success, and there were 800 people there. And so then when we were thinking about trying to create an event that was like, we throw parties or whatever for a couple hundred people, like kind of industry style, but like a public facing event, it was like, well, let's do that. Let's do a reading from the magazine. And we had gotten to know Kevin West, who's kind of like, I don't know if he's like the artistic director, like creative director of the Grand Central Market in Los Angeles. Because John Jeremiah Sullivan had written a piece about him in the magazine for the Apocalypse issue.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, the Grand Central Market's amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing...
Full disclosure, the Ace Hotel is, like, right down the street from it.
Yeah, I mean, I knew Grand Central Market because my wife had a jewelry store, and the jewelry district of Los Angeles is right down there. So, like, 15 years ago, I remember, like, killing time waiting for her to go buy, like, precious gemstones, like, eating tacos in Grand Central Market.
Well, and I'm sure you can appreciate it. There's a like massive chop suey restaurant there, which I learned about from your page of the magazine.
And it's an amazing place that's like the crossroads of like new Los Angeles things happening and like old Los Angeles. It's an amazing space, and they have this, you know, I think it's an Art Deco. My architectural eras might be off, but
that's fine.
It's called the Million Dollar Theater. This great space next to it. So we. You know, they were into us doing something there. And we actually were going to do it a year ago, and we didn't have it together, so we postponed it a year. But there's going to be, you know, an hour or so of readings in the theater, and then we'll adjourn to the Grand Central Market, and there'll be some of the vendors who are, you know, just vendors there, and then we're going to have, like, four chef-vendor collaborations.
We're going to talk more about this, but we're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to hear a song from Eli Paperboy Reed, who... joined us twice in studio, and we'll be back to talk more about Eating Out Loud in LA food scene.
She walked in my life and turned it upside down. I hollered, hey, hey, hey. I was serious about her, but she made me a clown. I hollered, hey, hey. Feeling lost, I didn't know how I could be found. I hollered, hey, hey, hey. Oh, she set me straight and put my feet on the ground. I hollered, hey, hey, hey. I was skipping like a record, a song on repeat, till she flipped the 45 and knocked me off my feet. Oh, like a shock, shock to the system. She pulled me out the water and she let me survive. I hollered, hey, hey, hey. I was skipping like a record, a song on repeat, till she flipped the 45 and knocked me off my feet. Ow! Like a shock, shock to the system, kick to the rhythm, jump start at the beat of my head. Jump start the beat of my beat. system. Turn me on and there's no turning me
off. And he's so good. When he came on the first time, he used a plate and a fork as, like, his percussion. Just, like, yeah. He's just wonderful, wonderful.
It doesn't sound like that when I sing.
Yeah. One of the things I always think that's, like, a really trick is to take, like, the pages come to life type of approach for that, where you're not just, like, you know, reading from that or, you know, curating from, like, you know, which articles will work well. Or, like, how did you choose or have you chosen yet, like, the articles and, like, what went into that process for what will be read live during the event?
I want to – working with the Symphony Space people, they picked things that I wouldn't have picked. Mm. And that was certainly instructive in picking things for this event. But also I knew the talent we have Eric Wareheim is going to read, and I love Eric Wareheim. Yeah. And then Jack Pendarvis, who's a great humor writer, great writer, but writes really funny things, had written this travelogue about an oyster, and it ends with, like, fiery diarrhea. And I'm like, this is something that, like, Eric Wareheim could have fun with. And I think he knows Jack. Like, I think that, like, triangulating those sorts of things would be good. But then also, like, Jonathan Gold has written a few things for the magazine, and we're buddies, and I love him dearly. And when I was talking to him about it, his wife, Lori Ochoa, had a quarterly called Slake in Los Angeles for 4 issues. And he was like, I wrote this story for Slake about a painting of fruit at, like, one of the museums there. It's like a Renaissance still life. And he, you know, and I got it from Lori, and I read it, and I'm like, this story, which is, you know, this analysis of this painting and still lifes of fruit and what it looks like and ends with, like, kind of a dirty kicker, is going to be a better piece read live than, you know, one of the great things that he's written for us. And right. I think that, like, opening up the what we were doing to reflect the talent and make the best evening of it. You know, also, like, I've always wanted Lucky Peach to be, you know, curatorial in what we're bringing together for it. And I would excerpt that story from, I would run that story from Slake in Lucky Peach or on luckypeach.com. So no reason to exclude it from the event. And then with, like, Kim Gordon, I've known Kim for years and I guess we're friends, but it makes me, I can't say I'm friends with Kim Gordon because it's like, you know, like knowing a deity or something. So, I sent her this, like, really, like, rambling, apologetic email being, like, we're doing this event. You know, she lives out in L.A. now. And, you know, would you mind doing it? And, you know, and kind of jokingly, I'm like, if you wanted to, you could, instead of reading something, you could just, like, bring your guitar and play noise of, like, over a recipe. And then I saw her when we did
Someone reading a recipe?
Like, yeah, like reading a recipe. But I'm like, you know, like, I'm thinking of, like, what she does with Body Head or something. Yeah. Like, just use fragments of words from this recipe and, like, throw on a couple distortion, you know, and, like, be Kim Gordon noise god. And and I saw her when I was out in LA in November, and she's like, yeah, you got to send me some recipes. I got to figure out what I'm going to do. Like, and I was like, oh shit, she's actually going to bring her guitar. So I think that, like, there's also a deep pleasure.
What recipes did you send her?
I think Priya, who works at Lucky Peach, actually handled it. And I think that I think that it's going to end up being a haiku recipe that I wrote in the first issue about like miso ramen. So it's like a poem recipe. And yeah, and it's just, like, exciting to me also, you know, I mean, you understand, like, bringing your interest in food and music together, the idea that there's going to be 1,000.
What a great concept.
Like, food people in a theater expecting food entertainment, and they're going to get, like, a Kim Gordon noise performance. Like, to me, that feels like a win. Whether or not they enjoy it as much as I do is really on them.
And the event sold out, which is great.
Which is
another, like, big win for the LA dining scene, which just continues to, like, grow unbelievably.
Yeah, I mean, the whole cultural scene in LA, I mean, whatever, it's trite at this point to say how cool it is there, but I think that, you know, like, if you look at it, if you were, I mean, I'm from Chicago, I was moving to New York, but I could afford to move to New York in the late 90s. Like, I couldn't afford to move to New York now, but you could move to some part of LA and you could have, like, a warehouse and do your installation. I mean, I think that there's just a lot of cool people doing cool stuff there in addition to all the Hollywood bullshit that is like the core of LA life, you know?
Yeah. And how did you pick the chefs for this? Which I feel like that would probably be harder than like who's going to read or like what goes into that thought process.
I mean, there was, you know, there's like a couple of people you ask who say no. But like, you know, Brooks had just opened Superiority Burger. So we
shout
wanted
out to Brooks,
you know, he's,
yeah,
I used to, I mean, yeah, I've been a fan for a while. And so getting him to do it was cool. And then Jessica Coslow at Squirrel is somebody who I've gotten to know pretty quickly over the last 6 months, but she's just great. And she was down to do it. And then, you know, I mean, I guess so. It was kind of just reaching out to people in the community. But now that I look at the list, I'm like, oh, man, I wish we had Nancy Silverton. I wish we had, you know, like, I mean, Jeremy Fox is just had a baby. So, like, I didn't think it was, like, the greatest time to be asking Jeremy to do something. But there's so many people in L.A. And then, like, if I was in L.A., I would have, like, driven out to Chengdu Taste and tried to, like, convince those guys to come down. So,
yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, you guys have already laid the groundwork by just doing such great articles on these people. That like it'd be interesting to see that, but I mean that just turns in. That's just like another idea that you can steal and just create a series.
But
we
can
talk for 5 minutes afterwards. I'll give you like 20 ideas.
I would love. I mean, that's I really, really, really love Los Angeles. I was trying to move there last year, and now my daughter's in a great public school that we love, and we're probably going to be here for years. But
do you have any places? I'm asking you, where are you going to go when you go out there to eat?
Where am I going to go when I go out there? I am going to go to Golden Deli for pho one morning for sure. And then, I take most of my meals with Mr. Gold when I'm there. Like, we just, like, you know.
That has to be a guy who gets asked all the time.
All the time. But his answer is, like, sometimes people ask me, and, like, you know, there's a special category of referral people where it's like, oh, I got to get them the right answers. I go to Gold. And then he's, you know. You know, you do the, you know, you kind of profile the person a little bit, and then you get the tailored recommendations. But I think we're going to have an issue on pho next year, so I'm going to try to do a lot of, you know, might go down to Orange County a couple days. I would, you know, I'm trying to think of places I would like to go. I mean, everyone loves Jelena. I haven't been there. I would like to go.
Their place, Gusta, is amazing. I kind of, like, lost my mind when I went in there because I just wanted to buy everything.
You just wanted it
we
all.
Just wanted, I mean, they really, like, it looks like it's just a beautifully designed space. The food's really good. It's like exciting because you can see the cooking, and they kind of have like all the check marks there.
But like Chengdu Taste, I would go back to. I'll probably go back there. I'm going to be out in LA a bunch in February, so when I'm out there with my family, I'll probably take my wife there, but not my children because they would be scarred by the Sichuan eating experience. Yeah, and I mean like San Gabriel Valley stuff, East LA stuff is really what I get. What I spend more of my time eating in LA, and also just like I never think about making reservations, so I like to go to places that you can just walk into because I'm kind of disorganized.
I think the one thing that's interesting about LA is that everyone, unlike New York, everyone seems to eat at the same time. It's kind of like France, where like you could not get an 8 p.m. reservation at Bestia for three months,
right.
But you go at 10 o'clock. And they're, like, so happy to see you.
Right. That's the thing in L.A. It's, like, if you wait till 9:45, you can eat at literally any seat in any restaurant.
It's like, it took me a while to kind of figure that out. But it's kind of crazy because, you know, New York, you're just like, well, you know, just don't go at, like, 8-ish.
Yeah,
but you could probably, you know, if you go at 7 anywhere in New York and sit down.
Yeah, my wife went uptown to see a play last night, and I'm like, oh, go to Yakitori Toto. And they got there at 6 instead of 5:30 when it opens, and there was an hour and a half wait.
Yeah.
I'm like, how is there an hour and a half wait for chicken skewers? But it's, you know, but it's Manhattan. It's like, you can't.
Everyone, like, there's enough people here that if, like, just a small percentage of people have the same idea,
yeah,
it's that. So I want to thank you for coming on. It's sold out, but Priya said we could give away a couple tickets.
We should give away some tickets.
Okay, so if you want to, I don't know, what should we do?
Is there like someone does
a little bit of a barrier to entry.
What is a barrier to entry?
Maybe if someone can just tweet at us or you like their best LA recommendation, and if it's interesting, you never heard of it, that could win.
That could win. Okay, yeah. Good. I was going to go with some sort of LA hair metal quiz from the late 80s.
Oh.
But I think that the best place that neither of us knows about in Los Angeles wins.
Yeah.
And you pick it because I think you know the city better than I do.
I'm like two eater lists and like 5 days ahead of you. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. And I will say it again. thanks for making Lucky Peach.
Oh, thank you so
much.
It
really, like, it really is one of my favorite magazines, and I do actually read it cover to cover.
That's insane. Thank you. Thank you for reading it, and thank you for saying that. It makes it worth making.
And also the Frank Spatino manual, just because it's just, it's the best.
It's good on the weeknights.
It's really, it's really good. Well, we have another track from Snacky Tunes Live, and then we will have Loose Buttons in studio talking about upcoming releases, their show last night, and some other New York band stuff. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Making rounds, breaking down without a sound.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're here with Loose Buttons live in studio. Hello, boys.
How's it going?
What's going on?
You want to go around the room and introduce yourselves?
Yes. I'm Eric. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I am Emmanuel Silverstein.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Adam.
Yeah, we can hear you from back. Yeah, in the back. I always feel like the drummers get like the short end of the stick. They're just like, yeah, just shove them in the back corner. Don't say anything. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
On our first show back in 2016 on this like oddly rainy but unseasonably warm day. You guys have just played Knitting Factory this week, right?
Yeah, we played it yesterday.
How was the show?
It was amazing.
Define amazing.
The fans were out of control. It was a beautifully packed room. For us, you know, we really feed off the crowd's energy.
Yeah.
Fans were great.
Well, how far into the show did you guys like pick up on the energy? Like, okay, this is like not your average show.
What song do you think?
I would say before the show.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, we could tell there was a couple other bands playing with us, and like everyone was there was a little baby who was just kind of like on someone's shoulders, like jumping up in the crowd. And from then on, we just knew it was adorable,
by the way.
Yeah.
She was 4 years old and like...
Were they responsible parents and like had the oversized...
No, that's the crazy thing. She was 4 years old, not even earplugs.
I can't. I like can't abide by it. Like, yeah. You know, like that to me just seems like, you know, like bring your kid out, but...
I think it's adorable when a baby also wears the headphones too.
I think it's like a strong look. Like, yeah. I think like we strong. As adults would not be able to pull it off. Like, you could not go in there like, hey, how's it going? Like, take off your headphones, please.
Exactly.
But kid up to a certain age, I have seen fathers who are still in bands, Les Heavy Fav, like strap their kids to their chest when they were babies and like they had the headphones on.
I mean... I wish her parents put those headphones on.
Yeah, or maybe they forgot them, or I don't know. I mean, the hearing's going to go one way or the other. Exactly. You just want to, like, hold it off as long as possible.
Exactly.
So how did you guys all meet? And you grew up together, right?
Yeah, so I have known Zach now for, like, 11 years, 12 years. We've been playing music for pretty much that long.
Yeah, these guys are 50 for people who are.
so we met in sixth grade, and, like, literally, like, I think the second day of school... Zach and I just started playing music together, and we've been doing it ever since. And then, you know, we played music in high school, and then when we went off to separate colleges, we still wanted to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the University of Miami, and my freshman year roommate is this guy right here, Manny. And we brought him on board, and then we stole the best drummer on campus to round us out, and now we've got Swagman Jones, aka Adam,
sitting in the back corner. How has it's interesting. It's like, you know, it's like young love in a sense. Like you know you grow together. So did you guys push each other like to develop differently, or how did you guys develop your writing talent, like your skills? Like, were you like, hey man, you got to practice a little bit more. Like, I'm getting a little bit better than you. Like, how did that kind of evolve over the years?
Definitely. I mean, Zach is probably pushes me subtly and subconsciously probably the most of any member in this band. And definitely, like, it's this kind of this back and forth where we kind of I watch him grow because, you know, he went to a different college as me. So whenever we'd meet back, you know, during our breaks, I'd see how much he's grown as a musician. And that's my motivation to then catch up to him. And I can't speak for him, but that's kind of my motivation there a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, I went to a very different school. I went to Wesleyan. I don't know if anyone...
Yeah,
if you know Wesleyan.
I've been there.
Yeah. It's a kind of a crazy place. So, huge music scene, a lot of weird music. So,
yeah.
So, but we kind of took that, you know, as an advantage, I'd say. And like,
exactly.
And kind of expanded our horizons in while we were at school. So.
Exactly.
Cool. Let's hear a song.
Perfect.
Why don't you play us a tune?
We love tunes.
Okay, great. What are you going to play first?
What about Thrill?
Let's do it.
Okay, cool.
Thank you. I came up with that one.
Loose Buttons live on Snacky Tunes.
follow close to the sting. Saying I get lost in the thrill sometimes. Oh, I get lost in the thrill sometimes. Knowing real well I'm just a jolly rancher in her drink. Mortal slander you assumes now what I think. I get lost in the thrill sometimes. Oh, I get lost in my thoughts sometimes. Yes. No, I won't stop letting her go. No, I won't stop letting her go. Until the feeling's gone, that's what I thought. Twisted little chatter on the bathroom floor. I can't stop, I get lost in the thrill sometimes. Oh, I get lost in my thoughts sometimes. No, I won't stop letting her go. No, I won't stop letting her go. No, I won't stop letting her go. Exciting than the edge of the night table for one. For a second the temptation felt more than just fun. I get lost in the thrill sometimes. Oh, I get lost in the thrill sometimes.
Since you guys have been playing together since sixth grade, are there any songs that have stayed? Or like, what's the oldest song you guys play? Or if you had to retire some of the older tunes, or all of them?
We retire a lot of songs,
much to the chagrin of a lot of our
a
older
lot of
fans.
Them are gone.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we're in a prolific writing period now.
Oh yes. Yeah.
So our newer shows, we're playing more of our new songs.
Oh, okay, yeah. the music. Is there like anyone in particular that's still like a point of like, please, like, I want to keep playing it, but everyone else is kind of like, past its prime?
Well, we have like the opposite scenario. We have a song that the people want us to play a lot that we don't really want to play a lot as much.
No, we have another one though that I want to play.
Retrobox.
We have a Zach versus the rest of us. One of those.
You guys
as well.
Can check out Retrobox. It's on YouTube. It's really good.
Might not be on YouTube anymore.
An unfinished song that.
Oh, okay.
Shot down.
So what is the? I mean, and having like such like a long history, like what is the writing process, or how do you guys put it together?
We pretty much. You know, we'll have the initial idea either come from, you know, Zach or myself, and we'll bring that in. And then it's not really a Loose Button song until the rest of the members put their little mark on it. you know, it's not a Loose Buttons song until Manny comes up with a beautiful bass line or Swagman with a beat that keeps it going. So that's pretty much how the songwriting works, and then we build these pieces on top of each other, and you know, they go through many different versions until it's the perfect one.
But yeah, it usually starts with kind of either, I would say, like, a lot of riffs these days. Like,
yeah.
Riffs over even melodies. So we'll write, like, most of the music before we even throw a melody on top.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa. The melody and then everything else will grow from
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you guys have a new song coming out this week, too, right?
Yeah, we have Crowded Room.
It's coming out on Yahoo Music, right?
Yahoo Music.
And what's the story behind that song?
That song is kind of, lyrically, it's about this daydream, in a sense, where, you know, you see a beautiful lady in the crowd, and you kind of just automatically have these visions of your future with her.
Mm.
And then, but these futures do not come true. At the end of the day, she's just another girl with another guy.
Got
so.
It. Can we hear it?
We'd love to play it for you.
Thank you.
We'd
That'd
love
be great.
To.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you, thank you.
So on top of that coming up, you guys have a EP coming out in the spring.
That's the plan.
How much of a plan is that?
We try to stick by it, but yeah. You know, we're usually a few months off of what our actual target date is. But we're in the studio right now. We just built our own studio in Long Island City.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so we're in there working.
What went into that process?
We pretty much took a storage room and...
Like, is it in a storage building?
It's literally in a storage facility.
Is that fine? It sounds not fine?
It's technically legal.
Okay. It's a space where a lot of bands are. They, like, understand.
It's actually a thing. A lot of bands do that. Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of one of the few places where you can be loud.
Exactly.
Right. And I guess, like, you can... It's just space.
Exactly.
And power. Right.
Exactly. So we went in there, and we're now in the process of making the aesthetics look nice, and...
You gotta dress up like a storage space.
Exactly. We some just Christmas put Christmas lights. Christmas lights all over the place.
Classic Christmas light. And what was the decision to build your own versus like going into, you know, working with the producer, going into another studio?
Well, and we're still in that process right now. But we thought it was smart for us to do the writing ourselves, really lock ourselves in a room and the four of us hash it out.
Yeah.
And then bring in a fifth voice to then round it out a little bit more. And we're in the process now of talking to a bunch of different producers. We'll see. You know, we've been talking to Rick Rubin, and
is it one room, or were you able to subdivide the
space?
No,
it's one room.
Oh, interesting.
It's really more of a rehearsal / writing space than a recording space.
Okay, so you're not going to record the record in there, or?
Probably not.
Don't think so.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I mean, it's amazing, like, just how you can get so much further along these days. Do any of you have, like, production background or, like, the tech?
Actually, Manny is the one that mixes all of our music.
Thus far, yeah.
So all the recordings we've had, it's been Manny.
Do you mix with an iron ear, or do you are you open to suggestions?
I'm definitely open to suggestions. I think currently one of our issues is when you totally self-produce something and you have unlimited power and unlimited time to edit it and work on it, sometimes that's like too much power, and you can get sort of caught in a loop of, well, let's go back and make it better. This is our art. It must be as art and good as possible.
Sometimes that constraint of, like, we only have a week to make this record, or, like, we have no money or things like that. Like, at some point, it's never going to be 100%.
You capture a time.
Yeah.
And that's something that we haven't been doing.
And that's something we're looking to do with this new EP. We want to most likely have someone that isn't me produce it and do it in a much more, like, focused short period of time, and have it not be something that we can spend months and months going back to and then be like, actually, like, I really hate the bridge, let's just throw it out and write a new bridge, and which is something that we've done before.
Maybe you guys can buy like a giant like stop clock or just like a countdown clock and install it in the space and be like, we have to just stick
actually
to this.
A genius idea.
Genius.
Yeah.
Do you want to be our producer?
Because I'll just throw out the ideas in there, but it is interesting to think about creative projects where, like, at some point it's like this long tail of, like, never, like, oh, I guess I could play, like, you know, a quarter note instead of a full note, and maybe just like, can we just open this back up or everything. And sometimes it's just good to have someone be like, you're done.
Yeah. And I think also just as a band, we've evolved a little bit. Our first EP 2 years ago, I think we were trying to be like really kind of artsy fartsy with the whole thing.
I mean, Wesleyan.
And right now, even songwriting wise as a band, we feel like we're trying to be a little bit more like raw, live indie rock fun, where it almost, like, you know, you don't need the record to have, like, you know, beautiful string arrangements or anything like that. It should just be like energetic and fun. And if you listen back and you're like, oh, that guitar's a little too loud, it's like, who cares? It's fine. It's not a big deal.
It's rock and roll, baby, you know?
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure... Oh, were you going to say something?
I was going to say that rock and roll is actually our favorite sport.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up.
And I needed to get that in because it's so true.
It's your favorite sport?
It's our favorite sport,
We play it really hard, and we've gotten good at it.
We do drills.
Yeah, we do rock and roll drills.
What are your rock and roll drills?
Pretty much play to a click at rehearsal. So, we're getting good at it.
It's amazing. Well, I want to make sure we have time to get in one more song. Where can people find the first EP shows, get all the information?
Definitely like us on Facebook. Search the band Loose Buttons.
SoundCloud.
SoundCloud, definitely. And if you pretty much go to those two areas, you will have all the information that you need.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank Peter for joining us. Please write in LA suggestions to win 2 free tickets to the sold-out festival. Shout out to my family. Shout out to my girlfriend. Why not?
That's what it's all about.
Happy 2016, guys.
Yeah. You too.
It's going to be a good year.
Happy New Year.
What are you going to take us out with?
An oldie but a goodie. Two wolves.
This one's still being played.
This one's still being played.
Yeah, okay, very much.
One
thanks
the,
for coming by.
Thank you so much.
Spend some time, a little bit of money. Capture the ride. You'll hold the lens and let's pretend when he's never coming. I'm in some dream, living in your company. I'm in some dream, living in your company. Then you go been a lot of money. Spend the night back at your room, wine and a spoon and a little honey. Well, I'm in some dream, living in your company. I'm in some dream, living in your company. Him for yeah, loving you go. Oh, 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 oh. Two wolves that are haunting for loving you go. Two wolves that are haunting for loving we go.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.